as you may have heard, we are launching a Patreon. For those that don't know what Patreon is, it's a platform that allows creators like podcasters to offer their followers more content, experiences, and even gifts. We have a survey that will be open for a limited time, so get your input in now so we can provide the benefits that you actually want. Maybe that's a one-on-one Zoom with me for mentorship, or a genetics book movie club, or an appearance on the podcast. Let us know so that we can make sure to offer it. The link is in the show notes and the blog post for this episode, and it's all over our social media. I promise it only takes 60 seconds to fill out, so please pause the show now, and hopefully now you already have done it. And again, it's really quick if you haven't already. So thank you all so much for your support over the past 10 years for the podcast.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hi, you're listening to DNA Today, a multi-award-winning podcast and radio show where we discover new advances in the world of genetics. From genetic technology like CRISPR to rare diseases to new research. For over a decade, DNA Today has brought you the voices of leaders in genetics in over 200 episodes. For the past 3 years, DNA Today has won the People's Choice Best Science in Medicine Podcast Award. I'm Kira Dineen. I'm a certified genetic counselor and your host. Joining me now is Dr. Jamie Fedegh, who is the founder and CEO of True Gene Diagnostics. We're going to be chatting about a breakthrough in eliminating variants of unknown significance, especially in relation to companion diagnostic tests and pharmacogenetics in oncology. So thank you so much for joining us here.
Thanks for having me, Kira.
Why don't we start out defining a couple terms before we dive into everything, just in case there's guests that are listening that are like, I know I've heard these terms, but I need a little refresher. What are variants of unknown significance?
Sure. So 99% of all of the mutations that happen in the body are something that we as humans don't know anything about. We don't know what they cause. We don't know if they cause a problem at all, even. We don't know what they do. And so they just call those variants or mutations of unknown significance.
Yeah, I love that explanation. It's very straight to the point. How about pharmacogenetics?
So pharmacogenetics is a general term used to describe like people looking for and studying, you know, around drugs and genetic mutations, and how does that cause interactions? How does that cause, the drug not to work? How does it cause, all sorts of different things? That's the general area of study that people are looking at with genetics and drugs.
And lastly, what are companion diagnostics?
So a companion diagnostic is an actual test that people can do to see how is this drug going to react or not react. And it's often used with precision medicine and other things like that to determine like, hey, this individual person and their specific genetic mutations, what's going to happen in their body. And there's some things that we know and don't know. And sometimes we have to do a companion diagnostic test to figure that out.
And we're going to be focusing today on how this all works in the oncology space, which I've been called out by some listeners. I don't do enough episodes about cancer. So this is my response to you guys. This is me trying to do more episodes focused on cancer. I think it's helpful for our audience to understand more about True Gene Diagnostics as we talk about this, to understand like where are you coming from in terms of being an expert on this show. Can you share a little bit about the approach of True Gene Diagnostics and what you guys do?
Sure, just real quick, and then we can get into some more cancer stuff for all your listeners. But real quick, what True Gene does is we are like a companion diagnostic. I put it in quotes, right? Because we don't actually do it. But what we do is we have more data on the HER2 gene than everyone else on the planet combined.
That's pretty powerful.
It is. And it's 100% true statement. And the data we have has an average median p-value of 0.00000000. I got to count to 21, right? 0.1. So it's a super, super high quality data that we have. And what we do is we take that data and we can compare it to people's individual specific mutations. And we can now tell them for the first time in history whether or not they are sensitive or resistant to a specific drug specifically for HER2 cancers and whether or not that drug is going to be, they're sensitive or resistant. Basically, sensitive means that the drug's actually going to bind. No one else in the world can tell you that based on your genetics except for us. We're the first people on the planet to do it. And if you're resistant, that means that the drug is not going to bind. And if the drug doesn't bind, we know it ain't going to work.
That's precision medicine at its finest. Like, this is going to work. This is not going to work. Let's skip all the steps in between and just go to the answer.
Exactly. We can't really say it's going to work if you're sensitive to it, but we do know that based on published literature, it's an 80% chance that it actually will work versus in normal cancer treatment, 75% chance that this isn't going to work just based on randomness of the drugs that the doctors choose.
Yes. Thank you for that clarification. I definitely oversimplified it there. So that is important that it's not necessarily a crystal ball, but it's really getting you closer to that and saying this is more likely to work. So how did you guys get all this data? Because, I mean, data is becoming like the most precious product, I think, for people and companies to be able to build up. I think we're going into an age where data is just incredibly valuable.
Yeah, it is. And basically what happened was Dr. Martin Schiller, he's a professor at UNLV, he got to teach a class, any class he wanted. And it was 25 greatest scientific discoveries of the last 500 years. And he had to create the curriculum himself. No one taught it. And after class one day, one of the students came up and said, "Hey, Dr. Schiller, what would it take to make one of the next 500 greatest discoveries of the next 25 greatest discoveries of the next 500 years?" And what he said was, "I don't know. I never thought about it." And then they had this long conversation, and he locked himself in a room for 3 days, and he came up with all these notes and grease and whiteboards of this way to measure data. He calls it the giga assay, to measure data at a greater quantity and a greater quality than anyone else on the planet. And the basics of what that giga assay is that, you know, 40, 50 years ago, we used to measure tissue samples, right? What happens in the tissue? And then, you know, 10 years ago, they started measuring individual cells, but they group them all together and they signal average the result from all those individual cells. And what Marty figured out is he figured out how to measure an individual cell's actual response and function. And so he can literally measure millions of scientific experiments, if you will, in one petri dish over a couple months. He's doing it the same way they've always done it, but instead of signal averaging millions of cells, he measures each individual cell's response.
Wow. That's so being able to compile all of that data is so useful, because anytime, like in a study, when they say the end number is this, it's like how many participants they had or what that is. So the larger the end number, the better that study is in terms of like, well, you know, if say you do a study with 3 people versus 3 million people, that study with 3 million people is going to be more reflective of like what actually is happening, what's in nature, how that works. So that is incredibly valuable. Talk about like big data. That's exactly what we're talking about when we refer to it.
That's why he has a median p-value of 10 to the negative 20th.
Right. The numbers all work. I'll have to trust you on that, because my my experience in statistics is pretty low. But, you know, we've been talking about and mentioning HER2 and breast cancer. So I wanted to, you know, mention some statistics as we get into this. I'm sure a lot of people have heard this, but that breast cancer affects 1 in 8 people assigned female at birth. So it's really common. When I take a family history for patients, usually there's someone with breast cancer in the family. Mm-hmm. And when we look at breast cancer, about 15 to 20% of breast cancer have a high level of a protein known as HER2, which we mentioned earlier. So let's get into this a little bit more now. So how does knowing if a breast cancer is HER2 positive actually help inform the medication that people should be prescribed? And I don't know if you can mention like what medications are involved in this.
Absolutely. So in general, so HER2 is like one of the worst breast cancers to get, unfortunately, because it is the one with the lowest survival rate of all the breast cancers. And so what they've actually developed is the drug companies have actually developed multiple drugs that are designed specifically to treat HER2 positive breast cancer, right? So HER2 positive just means that your breast cancer is producing a ton of the HER2 protein. So when you have HER2 positive breast cancer, you usually get prescribed either lapatinib, neratinib, or tucatinib. Those are one of the three drugs that make up 90% of all prescriptions for HER2 positive cancers. And even with those that are specifically designed for HER2 positive cancer, people still have a really, really low survival rate. Like after 3 years, it's like 1% or something. I don't remember the exact number, but it's super low. It's just a bad number. And so when you have it, when they started introducing these drugs specifically for HER2-positive cancers, they actually got the survival rate to go up some, but it's still one of the absolute worst. So that's why it's a good thing to know. You know, and they also have progesterone positive, and they also have estrogen positive. And if you don't have any of those, they call it triple negative. But based on which types of those three or four combinations you have, that's what it is that the doctor decides to treat. Now, when they figure out if you have HER2-positive cancer or any of these other cancers, they now then choose a drug based on what was designed for that type of cancer, but they have no idea if it's going to work for you. And like I said earlier, 75% chance, just statistical average with cancer drugs across the board, 75% chance any one of the drugs that they give you isn't going to work. That means 6 months of treatment. And now, after 6 months, they find out, oh, your tumor's worse, let's try another drug. Maybe you're resistant to it. We don't know. And you've prolonged your care. You've got all the nasty side effects. And hopefully you're still around so that they can try another drug. And that's literally the typical cancer treatment protocol. Like, that's a common thing that people do. It's just amazing.
It's crazy how much information we have and tools we have. But yet, when you actually go for care, what that standard care is, you're just like, how is it not better at this point? Yeah, and these are one of the tools that we're like, we need healthcare providers to be really being able to utilize.
Yeah, they have there's some with HER2 positive cancer, they know if you have one of three mutations out of 6,244 or something, if you have one of those three known mutations, they know that a drug called lapinib won't work for you. Right. And you would think that, oh, well, if we know that if you and there's a 27% chance you're going to have one of those three mutations if you have HER2 positive breast cancer. And so you would think that every doctor treating HER2 positive breast cancer would do a genetic test and make sure you don't have one of those three known mutations. Right. But they don't. But the problem is that not only is there three, there's 6,241 other mutations that we as humans have no idea how what they do to the drugs, your interactions or the effectiveness of the drug. Well, until now, right? We do. We now know we have the ultimate, you know, companion diagnostic test in quotes, because we're not really doing a companion diagnostic test, but we have all this data. So there's now zero unknown variants of significance in the HER2 gene tyrosine kinase region. Zero.
That's pretty impressive.
Every single one. Yes.
So any patient that does this test and you look at HER2, you're never going to say, well, we found a variant, but we don't know what it means. Every variant,
correct,
you either know, oh, that's just normal human variants, all good, that's not relevant, versus,
correct,
this is making a gene not work or something, and like, this is useful information.
And we actually know it on a scale too. So like, you know, it's like people always argue, is it nature or nurture, right? Is it our genes or is it our lifestyle? Well, we know that now it's both, and everyone kind of knows that, but we
right,
now know.
It's not
know
versus,
if you have this,
it's and now, right?
Exactly.
we gotta change that.
If you have this one gene mutation, well, depending on your lifestyle, it may or may not present a disease for you. But if you have this mutation, right, we know for sure, sorry, you're gonna get it at some point in the future, if you don't already have it, you know? So there, we know these mutations on not only a yes or no binary, but on an actual gradient mathematical scale of what the odds are that it's going to produce something.
And so when people have a HER2 positive cancer, or their doctor's like thinking about doing a biopsy, what should they be doing to like ask their doctor about? Like, it's because you have to actually have breast tissue that has cancer to test this. You can't do germline testing, right?
You don't have to. You can do germline, but with it's going to be much better to do a biopsy, because then we'll actually know for exactly sure what's in your specific cancer, right? Now, what it means is if we do germline testing and we find something positive, well, then you don't have to do a biopsy. You know it's there. But if we do germline and there's a negative, it's not an absolute negative, because that doesn't mean it's not in the cancer.
I see. Because your germline is kind of almost, I think of it like square zero. And then as cancer progresses, you're going further. Your genome is changing in the cancer, because you're collecting mutations. That's what cancer is on a genetic level.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's interesting. So once people are diagnosed and they say, okay, yes, you're HER2 positive, then they're figuring out which of these drugs is going to be most appropriate.
Yep. And so, right now they just randomly pick one based on the last sales rep in the office, based on the last study they read, based on, you know, who gives them the biggest commission. It's random. They really pick the three drugs at random 90% of the time.
Which, and with it really our needs test, to be an educated guess. Like, it's one thing to have a guest, an educated guest.
It should be, right? So that's where we come in, is that if you have HER2-positive cancer, or if you think you have HER2-positive cancer, right, what you do is you get our test, and now we're going to send you and your doctor a report that says these three drugs, either sensitive or resistant to. And if you're resistant to all three drugs, you bypass all three of the initial drugs that they would normally try and go to secondary treatments that are approved, because they are. They're already out there, right? But you have to try, I don't remember if it's two or three or all of them, whatever, but you have to try a number of them, and they have to fail before you can go to any of the secondary treatments according to the FDA. So with this test, this allows us to see that these drugs aren't going to work. We don't have to try them. Right? Or they might say that, hey, these two you're sensitive to and this one you're resistant to. So you know what? You got to take these. Or they might say that you're sensitive and resistant to two of them. And now, like HIV therapy or other things, what do? You actually take two drugs because your body is both sensitive and resistant to two. And that means that you're going to start developing mutations that will cause it to be resistant to just one. And all the other cells will die off and those will take over and you'll still have the cancer. So it really allows for this personalized medicine once we're able to know which ones are you sensitive to and which ones are you negative to, or sorry, resistant to.
Yeah, it's helpful to have kind of that cocktail of drugs to say, okay, this is the combination that's going to work based on your specific genetics. Yep. What about looking at family history? So this is very useful in terms of cancer to know who's at higher risk to develop cancer in the family. Like when I go take family history, even though I'm in prenatal, cancer comes up a lot. I'm still talking about it. So for that, let's say someone's biological mother had breast cancer and they're talking with their healthcare provider and they're like, yeah, it was actually HER2 positive. They have that information. If that person then develops breast cancer, they more likely to have HER2 positive breast cancer because they had a mom with it?
I actually don't know the answer to that question.
All right. So homework for me.
I've done the research.
I'll have to talk to one of my friends that's a cancer genetic counselor. We'll get back to my listeners.
My educated guess would be yes. But that's just my educated guess.
Yeah, of like how cancer progresses, I would think it'd be similar in family members, like just the
because
type of mutations.
Because it often has a familial trait to it, they call it. So
right.
They just don't know for sure.
All right, I'll look into that. Look in the show notes for the answer, people. Genetic technology moves fast. The first genome took 13 years to finish a draft. For reference, this was 20 years ago in 2003. And now a whole genome sequence can be performed in days, even hours. Since sequencing an entire genome can be done in such a short amount of time, this lowers the cost, which means more people can utilize whole genome sequencing now. This is particularly helpful in the NICU for ill infants. Perkin Elmer Genomics explained more to me in our full episode here on DNA Today. It is remarkable how quick diagnosis from whole genome sequencing can save a baby's life with a change in treatment informed from the results of that test. I learned more about how genome data is mined to maximize useful information from one data set and other omic assays that help enhance diagnosis. Don't miss the full episode here on DNA Today. You can visit PerkinElmerGenomics.com for more information. The link is also available in the show notes and on our website, DNAtoday.com. Did you know you can learn the sex of your baby as early as 7 weeks into pregnancy? Juno Diagnostics offers BIRCH, which is a non-invasive prenatal test that screens for Y chromosome material to predict the sex of your baby. Here's how it works. You get a kit delivered directly to your home. You follow the instructions to collect a couple drops of blood from a finger stick. Then you ship it back to Juno's CLIA laboratory for testing. Within just a few days, you'll receive the results of the sex of your baby. Learn more at junodx.com, where you can use the code DNATODAY for 10% off your purchase of BIRCH. Also, be sure to tune into our full episode interview with experts from Juno Diagnostics coming soon. You know, we're talking about HER2-positive breast cancer, but there's also, you know, as we mentioned, other types of breast cancer.
Tons. And other types of cancers.
So what are other genes related to cancer where we can kind of do the same funnel in terms of look at the information and then say, oh, let's say they have colon cancer or they have thyroid cancer, all these different types of cancers. Can this concept be applied to other cancers? Breast cancer is very common. But
it is actually, and that's what we're doing. So we picked HER2 positive cancer first because it kills more people in the United States than any other type of cancer. right? Because of the commonality and because of how many people just don't survive it. So that's why we picked that one first. So the next one we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing EGFR. EGFR is a gene that's responsible for about 11 different common cancers. And we're going to be doing that gene next with the, I think it's 10 most common drugs used to prescribe to treat EGFR cancers. So that within about the next year or so, we're also going to have a test that says, hey, you got any EGFR cancer? Come take our test and we'll tell you which of those 10 drugs you're sensitive or resistant to. And all we're going to be doing is we're just going down the line, and we can do about one gene with the drugs for it about every 6 months or so.
That's pretty fast.
Wow. It is. It's because, you know, again, it's because the Giga assay that Marty invented from, you know, and it just measures millions of data points at one time.
So in 6 months, I can't even do the math. Like you get so much data by mm-hmm. just dedicating your research to this. And, you know, EGFR, that's definitely one when I was studying cancer, especially when I was looking at cytogenetics and kind of that area in undergrad, that I remember that came up for lung cancer, that being one mm-hmm. of them. I mean, there's a lot that, yeah, yep. as part of that, as we talked about cancer progression, there's certain genes that are common that get mutated or have these variants, of known significance, where we say, okay, this is pathogenic variant, where yeah. we see that progression. So we actually know about that. And we did a really good episode with Dr. Kat Arney, who wrote a really interesting book kind of about like cancer evolution and looking at it almost like, your genome is changing. So looking at it like kind of a species within you, and it changed the way I thought about cancer. So I'll throw that in the show notes too. But yeah, this is just so interesting that you're able to use this pipeline, I guess we could call it, to then just start having more and more genes on this list. And then that's affecting what people are prescribed for lots of different cancers. I can see this just becoming standard of care is just part of the process.
Exactly. The FDA has already made a public announcement that they want precision medicine to be the future of medicine. But the problem is until, you know, the Giga assay came around, we didn't do it. Like, for example, like, For 25 years or so, right, Myriad's been studying the BRCA gene, right, for breast cancer. And we estimate, because we don't know and they don't say, but we can make an educated guess. After 25 years and $100 million, they have roughly 75% of all the variants on that gene mapped out. 75%, right? Versus we can do that in $1 million in 6 months, right?
That and the is whole very different.
It is. The whole rest of the world knows only about 1% about genetic mutations and what their actual functional effect is. 1%, right? 1%. And we estimate that in about 3 years, you know, I made a very big bold statement in the beginning, but we estimate that in about 3 years, we will have more data on genetic mutations than the rest of the world combined. Sorry, I shouldn't say more data. That's not accurate. We will have more measured data, right, and its functional effect on genetics than the rest of the world combined. That's how much of a leap forward. I firmly believe that Marty's going to win a Nobel Prize. He hates when I say that, but he's at least going to be nominated for one, I swear. Like, he just,
I mean, say it amazing. Now. People will listen back and be like, oh, yeah, yeah, he ended up getting the Nobel Prize in 2030. You know,
like, or at least nominated, yeah. People are going to yeah. start seeing. And it's just, you know, it's going to take – like clinical trials with drug companies. It's going to change all of that, because now you'll know exactly who will and won't respond to the drugs up front. And so you can self-select and put those in trial arms and kill the trial arms when they're not getting the results like we were expecting. And, you know, instead right. of like, you know, precision medicine with just one DNA, like one mutation, one genetic mutation, right? Instead of just having that one with a drug that treats it, you know, we estimate, because we've done a number of genes now, we estimate there's about 100 to 300 gene mutations that will work exactly the same as that one known mutation that they have a precision medication for. So this is going to allow drug companies now to do studies quicker, because they don't have to wait 7 years for everybody to come in with that disease and that one specific mutation, because they'll have hundreds of them to choose from now when somebody comes in with that disease that they yeah. can put into the trial. So it really is like, being able to measure this data in mass like this is going to dramatically change how healthcare is, how drugs are, prescriptions are, just all of that stuff.
Yeah, I can definitely see, as you're saying, with clinical trials, the inclusion criteria is they have one of, you know, very long list of pathogenic variants, the mutations, and like that you need to have one of those to even be considered to be a participant in the trial. Like yeah, we have inclusion criteria that's all kinds of other things. You got to be between these ages. Maybe mm-hmm. you have to be located in the United States or Canada or wherever it's taking place. So I can see that being part of it, especially as we go on with the years, the reason that you guys are able to do this now, and you probably couldn't have started this company 20 years ago, is because the cost of sequencing has plummeted. So that allows you to spend, as you said, like $1 million to get this amount of data. You know, 20 years ago, I don't think you could swing that just based on where the technology is. Yeah. So it finally is coming to a point where it's cheap enough to do. And now with this Giga assay, you're able to have so much at once. So like kind of the two-prong approach there.
Exactly. And that's why it's, you know, super high quality, super quantity. And I mean, you can get, there's other assays that will do the amount of quantity, but there's no quality to it. And there's other assays that will do good quality, but there's no quantity to it. This is finally both.
Yeah, you need to be able to have both to be able to have like publications and say like, this is our, you know, we've got both of those aspects.
We've got 4 peer-reviewed publications now. We're doing a study with Jackson Laboratories that will hopefully be done soon. We are just like so many things that we're, you know, pushing forward with and moving forward with. And, you know, it's like, you know, at the end of the day right now, the biggest impact is if you have HER2-positive cancer, you go to TrueGeneDiagnostics.com and you order this test. And actually, we have a /DNA special link just for your listeners that if any of them go there and they want to order on that link, you know, TrueGeneDiagnostics.com/DNA, they're going to get a special offer just because they heard it through your show. So,
yeah. That is fantastic. And we really appreciate you offering that to listeners. And for healthcare providers that are listening, they could also have their patients, you know, take advantage of this. So,
yep. And we also offer discounts for healthcare providers if they order in bulk.
Yeah. And that's what we want to be seeing. Just have it be part of the process with anything.
Yes. We are guessing based off of numbers. Like we don't know, but we are guessing about a 25 to 50% increase that we're expecting with the retrospective study that we're doing with Jackson Laboratories and survival rates.
And Jackson Laboratories, I mean, I've been a huge fan since like, I'm really going to nerd out for a minute. Since like late middle school, early high school. Like, you know, my family goes up to Maine on holiday. And so as we were up there, you know, my mom was like, let's go take a tour of Jackson Laboratories and like look at the mice and all that, you know, this is like high school or whatever. So, and then now Jackson Labs has a facility in Connecticut where I'm located. So, yeah, it really is such a cool company and they've got so much nerdy stuff that as you walk through, you can kind of see in the elevators, the gel electrophoresis and everything. So they're an awesome, awesome company. And yeah, their research is just phenomenal. So it's great you guys have been able to team up. As we are wrapping up here, I did want to ask you, we've kind of hinted at the future and everything, but, you know, let's say it's 10 years from now. How do you think that this is going to be used, as we said, oncology, but maybe let's span out a little bit more. How do you see this type of testing like pharmacogenomics being used?
It's going to be everywhere because the biggest problem with pharmacogenetics right now is 99% of the mutations are unknown. We don't know what they do. Right.
It's and like so you could do it, but then you don't have any like, oh, this is what to do with the results.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so with this Giga assay, like literally like with rare diseases, for instance, right? If there's a known mutation that causes a rare disease, right, we can take and we can measure that entire gene for all the mutations and see if any of those other mutations produce the same rare disease. And we can then throw different drugs in there. And we can actually measure whether or not those drugs will actually treat those rare diseases. We can do that all in 9 months.
Wow. That's like the time it takes for a human pregnancy. So like, that is quick.
It is. And you know, that's the power of this assay. So like not only just cancer, but rare diseases and anything that's genetic based. You know, and in the future, I see in like 20 years from now with this technology, we're literally going to be able to make a custom drug that will bind to your specific, you know, drug binding pocket based on your genetic mutations, because the other ones wouldn't bind. But now we make this one and boom, it binds. And now you can actually treat the disease, even though you have those weird genetic mutations.
Yeah. And that's very useful in especially the nano rare disease community, because some nano rare diseases are eligible for ASOs and different things through like NLORM, which is another organization I produce a podcast for. And that's great, but not everybody's eligible for an ASO. So people that don't fall under that, or they're an N of one, like there's only one person identified with this specific either change or disease in general. And then that's just there for the next person that has that or something. So we even see this, you know, I think a parallel to this is when we have a drug that is FDA approved for some for treatment for some disease, but then we realize, wait, we can use this for another disease. And we say, okay, mm-hmm. go to the FDA. Hey, can we use this for a second disease? Because we see that, you know, it's the same, it affects the person the same way that it helps them with treatment. It's kind of using that, but on this much more grand scale that affecting way more people in a positive way.
Yeah, exactly. We just measure in mass all the mutations, measure multiple drugs until we find one that actually produces the functional effect of the disease not being expressed in the individual cell.
Well, I think you've made quite an impression on the listeners. I think they're going to remember TruGene Diagnostics. And we'll have to have you back on to see, like, all right, what is the update and everything? Because you're having updates quickly over there. So thank you so much for coming on and just explaining this to me, my listeners, and giving us a peek into, you know, even 20 years in the future. You're giving us the crystal ball there. So won't hold you to everything. Yeah. But yeah, maybe coming back on when that Nobel Prize is won.
Yeah, right. Hopefully you don't have to wait that long. But yeah, definitely soon.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kira.
Juno Diagnostics has developed the next generation of non-invasive prenatal tests so that all pregnant people can access a higher standard of care. Juno Diagnostics is the only genetic testing company on the market that performs NIPS for common aneuploidies on blood samples from a finger stick instead of a traditional venous blood draw. That means you collect your sample on your own time at home and still have NIPS at a CLIA laboratory. Juno's Hazel NIPS screens for common chromosome variations seen in pregnancy, such as Down syndrome or trisomy 21, trisomy 13, and trisomy 18, in addition to testing for fetal sex. You can order this test yourself or have your healthcare provider order for you. Head over to junodx.com and use the code DNATODAY for 10% off. And keep your eye out for our full episode interview with experts from Juno Diagnostics, including fellow genetic counselor Katie Sagasser and Dr. Allison Rogers. In the meantime, check out junodx.com to learn more about Hazel and their other test, Birch, which tests just for the sex of your baby. Again, that's junodx.com with code DNATODAY for 10% off. Surely you've heard of whole genome sequencing, but what about rapid and ultra-rapid whole genome sequencing? This is an emerging method of diagnosing genetic conditions for quick management. PerkinElmer Genomics offers this incredibly valuable test, which can be life-saving for ill babies and kids. Learn more in our full episode with PerkinElmer Genomics on here, DNA Today. You can visit PerkinElmerGenomics.com for more information. The link is also available in the show notes and on our website, DNATODAY.com. For more information about today's episode, visit DNATODAY.com, where you can also stream all 200-plus episodes of the show, including video versions of interviews recorded in 2021 or later. Any questions, episode ideas, guest pitches, or sponsor inquiries can be sent into info@DNATODAY.com. Be sure to follow us on social media, especially so you don't miss a giveaway. We are at DNA Today Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and more. Please rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This truly helps us climb the charts and allow more genetic nerds like yourself to find the show. Here's a bonus. If you do and send us a screenshot, I'll give you a shout out on the show. DNA Today is created, hosted, and produced by myself, Kira Dineen. Our team includes communications lead, Corinne Merlino, video lead, Amanda Andrioli, outreach intern, Sonia Tanaker, social media intern, Kajal Patel, and graphic designer, Ashlyn Anokian. Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, they're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.